All right, welcome to the February 6th Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee. A meeting is called to order. Representative Fisher.
Move to approve the minutes.
Approve the minutes of the January 30th, 2013 minutes. Discussion on the motion. Representative Fisher renews his motion to approve the minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Nornan. Representative McNamara will move House File 327 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Game and Fish Omnibus Bill. Representative Nornan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good job, Representative McNamara.
And I appreciate the speed with which you scheduled this hearing. That's
You're welcome.
But we have plenty of time to prepare, so. This is, Mr. Chair and members, probably the shortest bill that I've ever introduced in the years that I've been here, serving in the legislature. So the bill simply allows for one additional line to be taken in a fish house. Right now, the state limits two lines, and this would allow for a third line as you're out there in the ice fishing for your walleye. I have a constituent who basically has brought this issue to me, and he's fishing in North Dakota and South Dakota on a pretty regular basis, and both of those states allow four, and Minnesota currently allows two. So he's trying to be a little in the middle of that pack and say, let's go with three and see how that works. And I know that the DNR has some opinions on it, and you'll hear that soon. I have fished in a fish house twice and never caught a single fish, so I know they'll claim this is going to be real detrimental to our fishing population, but not if I'm fishing, so maybe that should be an amendment here to the bill. So at this point, Mr. Chair, I'm open to questions and or other testimony.
Representative Nornan, do you have any testifier?
Not in support. I can find you some.
Okay.
There are a couple of willing people that would like to talk about the other side of the issue.
All right. Well, then let's have the department come up and we'll discuss the bill from their viewpoint.
There are state secrets in there.
Welcome and introduce yourself to the committee and go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Representative Dale, Chairman. My name is Dirk Peterson. I'm the Chief of Fisheries for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And I'd like to provide at least some perspective for the committee on Representative Nornan's bill. I'll take a couple minutes to give a bit of context, and then I'd like to address what we think may be some of the concerns the committee might like to hear about before they make a judgment on the bill. One of the things I like to point out to people is that Minnesota right now has some of the best fishing in the nation. We are a top five destination place for good fishing. Muskie fishing is outstanding. Walleye fishing, we are the walleye state, and we've done a lot to make sure that it is a good state for that sort of angling. You go right down the list of species, and our large lakes are renowned for it, and there's a reason why we have good quality fishing as well as an abundance of fishing opportunities. Not so long ago, post-World War II, right through the late 80s, the average size, the quality of fishing, if you will, declined over all those years to where you started seeing things in the newspapers like we were the state of quarter pounders and potato chips. And that led to what many of you are familiar with as the Round Table. And the Fisheries Round Table was the first to start addressing widespread or broadly viewed issues that were being experienced by anglers. They wanted to catch some larger fish, some quality fish, and that's how the Round Table began. And over the last 20 plus years, we have worked closely with constituent groups at the local level and at the statewide level in the Round Table to do what we can do to provide good opportunities, but at the same time make sure that we have quality fishing, meaning larger fishing, maybe sometimes in cases trophy fishing. And so a lot of the gains that we've made and improvements in fishing around the state are related to the use of length-based regulations like protected slots, minimum size limits, in some cases by reduced bags, and in two other cases maybe stocking. So anyway, the system that provides for quality fishing in the state is related to seasons, the amount of gear, the type of gear you use, the type of bait you use, the bag limit. All those things interact in a system of fishing that provides for outcomes that Minnesotans in general have asked for and are represented by our constituent groups, most notably in the roundtable. So anyway, anytime you change some of that system, you may have to adjust other parts of that system. And so when you add additional pressure onto our fishery resources, there's some give and take. If you add three lines in the winter time, you may see the quality of northern, these are just some examples, you may see the quality of northern pike go down in a lake because you've got more lines out there catching northern pike, catching on average larger northern pike, and over time you may see the decline in the average size on a given lake. On a more developed situation, you've got something like Red Lake, where we've recovered it after the collapse in the late 90s. We've worked hard to bring that fisheries back, and we now establish what are known as a safe harvest or a target harvest level. We try and manage the regulations, length-based, end bag, and season, to generate the best fishing opportunity for walleye we can on Red Lake. And as that lake's recovered and we manage for that target harvest, you hear each year that we're adjusting the regulations a little bit, the sizes you can take, the number of fish you can take. And so those are reflections on how we manage for target harvest. If you increase the winter fishery pressure and effort on Red Lake, we may have to do adjustments in size limits or bag the next year. So just an example, it's a connected system. You push on one end of it, you may affect the system on another. And then finally, we do...
Excuse me. Sorry. I thought the ice cream truck was coming down the street.
I'll withhold my comments. Anyway, Mr. Chairman, continuing on, the third part is more specific to lake trout. This is a slow-growing heritage species. We've got about 1,000 lakes, a number of lakes, most of them in the boundary waters, that can still sustain this cold water species, which is slow-growing and vulnerable to over-harvest. In 2000, we did a bag limit review of all of our species, most of them to follow the conservation ethic that most Minnesotans were asking for, but more importantly, when we reduced the bag limit on inland lakes for lake trout from 3 until 2, it was to make sure that this species did not become over-harvested and ultimately a conservation concern. Hooking mortality for lake trout, even in the boundary waters, can be as high as 24% on released fish. And so if you add a third line, you'll put additional pressure on this species. We'll probably have to recommend the changing of gear and bait types to offset something like that, as well as consider, do we need to move from 2 to 1 as a bag limit for lake trout. So those are three quick examples about changing the interconnectedness of rules and regulations for fishing. One is you may decrease the size quality on a given lake that we fought hard over the last 20 years to achieve. Number two, it'll affect how we've managed target harvests on important lakes like Red Lake that are recovering. And thirdly, it'll put pressure on conservation or sensitive species like lake trout. So I just wanted you to be aware there are consequences that come when you start changing parts of the machinery that regulate fishing in Minnesota. And the two-line system is something that has worked well. It's been in place since 1975. At the agency, we don't hear any requests for additional lines. So we think most anglers in our interviews out on the lake and calls into the office that anglers, by and large, are satisfied with the regulations as they are and the number of lines that can be used. If I could speak specifically to Representative Nornes's reflection on four lines in the Dakotas, there aren't very many people out in the Dakotas, and there's a lot of water relative to those people. So it's up to those game and fish departments to regulate how much gear they use and how that affects the quality or quantity of fishing that's available. You could adjust your system in Minnesota to four lines if that was your desire. But be aware that it could result in our recommending changes in bag limits or regulations or possibly seasons. So with those perspectives, I'd be pleased to take any questions from the committee.
All right, questions for the department.
Mr. Chair, if I can make a couple of comments. The request that I received was not from someone that is fishing up in the boundary waters. If the committee or the chair or someone decides maybe that ought to be an off-limits area, then we could exclude that. If that makes people more comfortable, I'd have no problem with seeing that happen. I'm also not in support of the two lines for fishing in the summertime. This is not connected or related to that at all. It's just ice fishing where you might be jigging and bobbing, and I don't see that it's going to have negative impact, because you still have to stay within the limits, and if I'm fishing with them, you can just forget about any impact on the fish. So it's up to the committee to decide what you want to do. I think the motion you made was to lay it over.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, Representative Norton, so I was actually going to make an oral amendment and add two line on open water so I could satisfy former Representative Junkie. Oh. But maybe I won't do that. We got Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. questions about for the agency. You said that in 1975, the two line fishing came into place in the wintertime. Has the fishing since 1975 gotten better or worse in the state of Minnesota? And I realize there's a lot of different ways to define better, but, are there more fish now or fewer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, there's two parts to your question. Has it improved? And then the part is, are there more fish or are there better fish, bigger fish, if you will? In 75, that would have been additional pressure on the fishery by adding that line. And we don't have a way to necessarily tease out the additive effect that had in the slow decline from post-World War II to the late 80s. But the assumption was that any pressure you put on the fishing populations out there will have some effect. So the assumption is that the two-line rule probably had some effect. Since then, we've adjusted to that. But it was post-80s, 90s, and 2000s with motivated citizens and anglers and agency work, we brought back the quality on many places. Red Lake is one of those. You see protected slot limits for walleye on some lakes or for northern pike. Those are attempts to bring quality, meaning you can still harvest a fish. There may be quite a few out there, but you have the opportunity to catch a large fish. You may have to return it to the water.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you talked about hooking mortality. Do you have data that breaks down the hooking mortality differences between winter fishing and summer fishing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, winter hooking mortality represents some of the data gaps that we have. You know, most of the problems associated with hooking mortality are concerned with warm water, lower oxygen levels, physiological stress to the fish. Some of that is apparent under the ice, but we just have some spotty data. When it comes to lake trout, since a lot of the fishing occurs in the winter, we know that when you fish with a Cisco or you just leave a still bait out there versus active jigging, you will probably have a hooking mortality rate of close to 32%. If it's just you actively jigging, that goes down to 9%. Because you're actively working the fish, you know, you're using your best techniques and handling the fish. But the average is 24 when you bring those two together. When you fish for northern pike in the wintertime with like a chunked up Cisco or something, and you put a sea hook out there or a Swedish hook, whatever you want to call it, we can have hooking mortality in northern pike up to 33%. So those are two figures I have. I don't have data for walleye or some of the other species you might have interest in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with regards to, you said that we were one of the top five destinations. How do our rules on number of lines and so forth and fishing pressure compared to the other states that are actually above us?
Mr. Peter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, Well, top five is like number of anglers that we have. You know, when you look at federal aid statistics, we're one of the top five states as far as anglers. We also have a very well-developed tourism or non-resident angler base, about 300,000. That's very high. You look at statistics for angling participation, it's remained stable as far as numbers in this state, where other states are seeing relatively strong declines in participation. And one thing is we have better quality fishing than we've had in the past. That's one thing I would like to highlight. Part of that comes from some of our regulations are somewhat conservative. We have one line in the summer, two lines in the winter. That's consistent with how Ontario and Manitoba do it. Both those provinces do have a reputation for quality fishing opportunities. The Dakotas have, I believe, two in the summer, four in the winter. Iowa, Wisconsin have three, I think, year-round. Or at least the third line in Iowa, you have to purchase a separate line license, and you can't use it until you have that line.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One last thing, then. You know, my sons and I and my friends and I, we try to limit our catch and at the same time catch our limit. And we practice catch and release a lot. We use barbless hooks quite frequently. I'm curious to know if you have a limit, whether the limit is four walleyes or six, depending upon which lake you're on, how does the number of lines impact my getting to that limit? I mean, when I reach the limit, I got to quit fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't quite get the correlation between limiting lines and, you know, fishing and depleting the population.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I'll try and answer your question. Please redirect if I don't get it correct. But basically, one of the things we're talking about is quality fishing. You know, most anglers tend to look for larger fish in the population versus the smaller ones. So, you know, you're actively selecting for those larger fish. You're fishing for them. When I use the example of a Swedish hook or a sea hook, when you're chunking some fish to catch northern pike, you're targeting a larger fish. But you're also using a gear type that will result in a higher hooking mortality. So now you've got three lines, and you're going to put out one more tip up with a sea hook and chunked bait, and you're not actively jigging or anything, then you've increased your potential for harvesting larger fish, and the mortality rate for those fish will go up. As a result of that, even though you may not have reached your limit, you may have affected the overall quality of the fishing experience overall, collectively with other anglers that are using three lines. You know, northern pike are very productive, so once their population level is reduced and spawning facilities are adequate, they'll put off a nice year class of small fish for you to catch next year.
Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to, you know, having been an avid fisherman all my life, going back to when I was just a little kid, my dad taught me how, not the most effective fisherman, but I do enjoy the sport. I have to say that I just am trying to imagine a reason why we would need to add a third line in the wintertime. I just don't understand. I can't see a compelling reason why we'd want to change something that seems to be working already. And I think about Representative Fabian's question, and it seems to me like it's just a matter of math. If you have a certain percentage of mortality rate, and you're only keeping a certain select amount of species, and if you have to catch X amount of species to attain one keeper, and now you're doing it three times as fast, it seems to me that it's quite clear you're going to have more hooks in fish's mouths, which means more mortality. And I would be very nervous about making changes to a system that seems to work very well, nor in my experience have I ever heard someone reasonably say that this would improve my fishing experience. If I could be even having more lines out there, I'd much rather spend my time doing one line right or two lines right than managing three like that. So I more of a statement, but I just can't imagine supporting this bill. Thank you.
Okay, anyone in the audience have any testimony for or against the bill? There being none, Representative Nornes, do you have any final thoughts on your...
No, I appreciate the opportunity to present the bill to you and your time and consideration, and leave it to the will of the committee and to the legislature to determine the outcome.
All right. Representative McNamara renews his motion to lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the game and fish bill. Thank you very much.
Yep.
All right. The next bill, members, that we will take up is House File 141, Representative Ward's bill, Soil and Water Conservation District Timelines.
Thank you.
And that is going to be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. And Representative Purcell moves House File 327. Representative Ward? Or House File 141, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for listening to this this presentation. The bill addresses a contradiction in state law as it applies to redistricting within counties. Counties redraw commissioner lines every 10 years, just like the legislature does. If a county has soil and water conservation supervisors who are elected, the county has to answer to two sets of statutory language that are contradictory. MS-103C.311 says lines must be redrawn at least 30 days before filing. MS-204B.135 says 80 days. As the Bible says, who will prepare for battle if the trumpet sounds an uncertain note? Jennifer Wagenius is from Washington County, and she can explain in more detail better than I can what this means.
All right, thank you. Introduce yourself to the committee and then go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Jennifer Wagenius from the Director of Property Records and Taxpayer Services for Washington County. There is a provision in statute that allows soil and water conservation districts to elect supervisors to the district rather than at large. This is an optional form of government, and right now the Washington County Soil and Water Conservation District is the only conservation district that we are aware of that has adopted this provision. And so that is why it was identified in Washington County this year and not in any other counties, this conflict. During the redistricting process, we discovered this in 2012. And it's important for us to keep the soil and water conservation districts and the commissioner districts the same, as the same principles apply to redistricting both, and it's easier for our citizens and for ballot programming and precinct selection if they're the same. So we'd like to keep the districts and the timelines both aligned. Because of this disparity, we were required to we did have to move our commissioner redistricting up a week, so it reduced the amount of time that our commissioners were able to work through that process. It's our goal to achieve consistency between these timelines and statute. And our office has been in communication with the Soil and Water Conservation District, as well as the Secretary of State's office regarding this adjustment, and there's been no opposition. Thank you.
Question, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't really want to mess with a bill that has a biblical citation with it, but I think this it's good that this bill is in committee, Mr. Representative Dill, because I think it highlights one of the issues with soil and water conservation districts, that about 10 years ago the authority was given to soil and water conservation districts to choose an optional system of representation, and that would be, instead of running at large, they could be elected at a county commissioner district level. And out of the 90 soil and water districts, only Washington has done that. And Representative Ward, to your knowledge, there hasn't been any hue and cry of how horrible or how difficult or how onerous this is to have soil and water supervisors elected at a county commissioner level rather than countywide.
I don't think most people are aware of it.
Representative
Hansen. And that's my guess as well. And I think when you take it to the metro counties in general, where Dakota County, Representative McNamara, we have people elected countywide, mm-hmm. and the district lines have not been changed since the 40s. In Hennepin County, the district supervisors are elected countywide. So I'm guessing there's over 500,000 people voting on the soil and water supervisor position. Anoka County.
Representative Hansen, do the people voting even know who these people are?
Well, Mr. Chair, when I was elected, I think they
were
very well informed.
Well, I guess you answered my question.
I think I will use the seat that I once held as an example. There were six candidates because there is no primary. So it's six candidates on the general ballot, and everybody in the county voted. And you see a good mathematical random distribution of voting based on the names. And I get every election more calls about who is running for soil and water than I do about my own race. Mm-hmm. And I get them from Ramsey County, Hennepin County, Dakota County. I don't get them from Washington County because it's a smaller district. And I think for the future, I believe in elected soil and water supervisors. And I think in small counties, you can have township basis.
Our county's pretty big.
But you've got population-wise, you've got people who know who's on the ballot. In many counties, there is no opposition. But generally, in the metro counties, you have contested races. And there's no way that a soil and water supervisor can run a campaign for hundreds of thousands of votes, to reach hundreds of thousands of voters for the job that pays per diem and mileage. It just is very difficult. So we have seen people that run, they get elected, and then they quit after a while because they don't understand what the job was. Representative McNamara is shaking his head. And then it's an important thing. It's an important role. We provide a lot of money through soil and water conservation districts. And so I think what Representative Ward has brought in front of us is an example of, we gave them, you know, sometimes we give, rather than requiring something, we say, we'll give you the option. So 10 years ago, we gave an option, and only one chose to do it because it was change, but it's worked. And so I think as a committee I think this is a discussion we need to have specifically in large population counties about having at-large elections when we're providing lots of money to the district. And I'd like to hear, and I don't want to delay your bill. I think I'm going to vote for it. I'll vote for it on the floor. I think it's needed. But I would like to hear if any, because we really don't talk about soil and water districts that much. We do provide them with quite a bit of money in the other committees. So,
okay, Representative Bogenius, do you have a question for Ms. Bogenius?
No.
Okay, very good.
Is it the same spelling?
Oh, my.
Oh, we're going to have a chat.
Anyone in the audience like to testify for or against House File 327?
Mr. Chair?
I keep reading the wrong line. 141, I'm sorry. Against House File, for or against House File 141. I have to put on my glasses, I'm sorry. I look a lot better with them off. Okay, Representative Ward.
Mr. Chair, I agree with Representative Atkins' comments about having a more thorough discussion about these things, and I appreciate your support of the bill.
With that, this bill, Representative Purcell, renews his motion on House File 141, recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
The meeting, Representative Ward.
I learned at the last presentation that there is some folklore about new representatives presenting a bill for the first time for a particular committee are supposed to bring food. And given that, you all understand the schedules that we are keeping. Mm-hmm. I don't have time to cook, but I did bring treats.
All right.
Nice.
Okay, now, concludes the actual agenda, but Mr. Meyer is going to come forward and give us a short presentation. We'll probably have some questions on an emerging issue that has come before us today.
Mr. Chair?
David.
Mr. Meyer. Oh, Representative Bogenius.
Well, you surprised me so much I didn't know how to respond, but I think it would be wise of this committee at some point to take a few minutes and discuss whether in the metropolitan area we could support a bill to make districts.
Okay, thank you. I think I don't really see any opposition here at this moment to that concept. And I see McNamara is shaking his head, so I mean, that's something we might be able to get done. All right, Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We're handing out a copy of a press release that many of you have seen already today, but thank you for the opportunity just to discuss this in your committee here. Today, Commissioner Landwehr announced that we'll be suspending the 2013 moose hunting season and actually postponing that indefinitely until we can make a determination that the population is on the rebound again. Basically, what we've seen, thanks to research that we're conducting through support of the Legislative Citizen Commission of Minnesota Resources, the legislature, and other sources of funding and partners, is that our moose population is in serious decline. Since 2010, our moose population has declined 52%, and our recent aerial surveys have just indicated a decline of 35% from last year. So with that, Commissioner Landwehr announced today that we will be suspending the 2013 moose hunting season until the population recovers. The moose population decline is in no way has been impacted by the hunting. Hunting is not the cause of this decline, yet we're taking this action because we feel it's reasonable and responsible in light of the recent data and uncertain future of the moose population. We're also participating in what is state-of-the-art research going on right now. Starting in January, we began fitting over 100 moose. I think we have 110 to date in northeastern Minnesota with GPS tracking collars and data collection devices that will allow us to also monitor internal temperature, location, and when a collared animal will, if it were to pass away, we will be able to find that animal. Our goal is to, within less than 24 hours, so we can conduct a rapid necropsy on that animal and do some determination of what may have been the cause of that. Because of the moose populations, or the moose thick hide and just the internal temperature, they rapidly decompose, and if we can't get to them within 24 hours, we see them internally decomposing, and we can't do any research on their organs for biological or different kind of contaminants, so it's important to get there right away. On the back of this fact sheet, you'll see the last paragraph has a guide to a web link. It's www.mndnr.gov/moose. And again, it's www.mndnr.gov/moose. This is a website that will show our tracking information to date. We'll have daily or weekly updates as to what our research is finding right now. There's an interactive map of the northeastern Arrowhead region, and you can click on different zones. It'll show you how many animals, what sex have been collared, and what's going on with our research to date. So this is a way that citizens of the state of Minnesota, your constituents, people who are interested and concerned about the moose can keep up to daily or weekly information on what our research is finding. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you for allowing us just a few minutes to talk about this important issue with you.
Well, thank you very much. I kind of put Mr. Meyer on the spot here in the committee room to come down and talk to us, because this is like serious business. And one of the things, there's been pressure on this committee and pressure on the chair from some of the public to have a moratorium and to have hearings on this immediately, even earlier than today, and although this isn't a hearing, and to end the moose season because of this, what they folks perceived as a precipitous decline. Anecdotally, at my home where their moose are abundant, they're not nearly as abundant as they were just 5 years ago. But I felt that we needed to let the DNR do what they do and come up with an idea. And I think they did the right thing, and I think that hunters should support that. And I'm mm-hmm. very comfortable with this as we go forward. I want you to speak a little more about the calf recruitment and the technology and what you're going to be doing with the calves in the spring calving season for tracking, and tell about the collar and what happens to the collar, and little babies get big. And can you talk about that at all?
Mr. Chairman, I am not a moose biologist by any way, shape, or form. So I don't have the latest information on that. I'm not sure if we have the right staff here or not. If, Kathy, if you can address that a little bit. Kathy Don Carlos, our Deputy Director from the Division of Fish and Wildlife, can talk about that a little bit. But just one point you brought up, Mr. Chair, I want to highlight again. This population decline is in no way, shape, or form the result of the hunter harvest. This is something we're suspending the hunter harvest to help increase the likelihood of this population coming back. We want to make sure we're taking any and all precautions that we can. So hunting was not the cause of this, but we are suspending that activity to help ensure a hopeful, complete restoration of this population.
What I heard you say, Mr. Meyer, is that hunters aren't the problem, but that hunters are willing to sacrifice a hunt so that we can control every bit of the mortality that we can actually control until such time we get back on our feet, when and if that happens. So I'm real happy with that. Go ahead. Introduce yourself to the committee and go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Kathy Don Carlos, and I'm a Deputy Director, Division of Fish and Wildlife, Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chairman, your question was regarding calves and the second of three studies that we're conducting. Mm-hmm. We'll be tracking the cows this winter, and in May, when the parturition or the birthing season starts, we'll be monitoring their behavior, and based on work that Dr. Ron Mullen from NRRI has done, behaviorally the moose cows behave differently when they're about to give birth to a calf. And so based on behaviors that we'll be monitoring, because those cows will have radio collars, we'll be able to predict or determine when a cow has dropped a calf. At that point, we'll search to find the calf, do a physical examination, collect some blood samples. I'm not sure if we're putting in ear tags or not, but we are going to put in adjustable radio tracking collars on those calves. In that way, we can monitor the calves when they're most vulnerable to mortality. One of the problems we have with the moose population is that although the cows are becoming gravid or pregnant at a normal rate, calves are not being recruited back into the population, which means that they have a high mortality rate, a higher mortality rate than other populations. So as the calves grow, they'll reach a point where the collars will no longer fit, and those can be removed from a long distance. There's a charge in the collar, and the collar can be popped off.
Okay, thank you. That was good information. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Don Carlos, I'm thinking back to Ecology 101 and population dynamics, and what happened with bison 100 years ago is we got to a very narrow genetic pool of animals. And I support what you've done with the moose hunt, because I'm concerned, particularly when we deal with the Northwest, but overall we get to a very narrow base or a very narrow foundation. And if you could just talk about maybe some of the genetic testing if you're doing, or is that a concern when the population gets to a certain point? Because I think related to hunting, that's where we run into an issue, is if every moose becomes valuable for its genetic diversity to the herd and provides strength to the herd because you've got that population.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, that's a very good question, and we're actually seeing the questions becoming more sophisticated as we continue into these discussions with the public and with yourselves about moose population dynamics. There's a field in population biology that specializes in understanding small populations, and there are some very famous studies that look at island populations. So Isle Royale is a great case study for understanding aspects of population biology, the dynamics between wolf and moose, and just the limited ability for new blood to come into that island situation. In this case, We are taking samples to monitor genetic diversity in the moose population. There's no evidence that we have any issues with that. Because this population is contiguous with the Ontario population, it's really all one. There's genetic flow across the border. So a small population biologist will be very concerned about how small the population gets, but at this point we're not concerned about genetic viability. If the population was to contract and it was able to be stabilized and then maintained or increased, we'd continue to look at genetic diversity, but it would have to be very isolated and a very small population. We can't give you a number, but that's one of the things that our research scientists are going to be collaborating with other population geneticists on.
All right. I want to thank you for, on very short notice, coming up, but members, I want to tell you that we are going to have an official hearing on this, informational hearing on this. There's no bills. There is a bill in the Senate for a moratorium, but I'm not intending to hear any bills of that nature. But we are going to have a hearing where it's publicly noticed, and so the people can come in and testify for or against or get a better understanding of this, and that it can be properly notified, televised, however that may be. But we're not going to have that right away because we've got some other things to do. And the DNR has taken the right step, in my estimation, to get us to where we need to be. With that, the meeting is adjourned.